Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Monday, November 5th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. On Saturday, a jury convicted a Hoonah man of first-degree murder in the deaths of two police officers. John Marvin Jr. had been on trial in a Juneau courtroom for nearly 2 weeks. He faced murder charges in the deaths of Hoonah Police Sergeant Anthony Wallace and Officer Matthew Tokuoka. The two were gunned down in front of Marvin's home in Hoonah in August 2010. The district attorney, David Brower, argued that Marvin held a grudge against the officers after a 2009 run-in that left Marvin beat up. That incident stemmed from a trespassing call and led to charges against Marvin that were ultimately dismissed. Brower says Marvin killed the men, quote, in cold blood, and said bullets found at the scene matched a rifle in Marvin's home. Defense attorney Eric Hedlund called the state's case circumstantial and said no one saw who fired the shots. Authorities killed seven bears at Poison Cove near Sitka in their efforts to find out what happened to a man who died there last month. Two sows were taken, as well as their five cubs, which would have been unable to survive in the wilderness without the sows. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Samples from all seven bears have been sent to the State Wildlife Veterinarian's Office in Fairbanks. What they reveal will hopefully shed more light on what happened to Tomas Puerta, a 54-year-old man whose remains were found in a bear cache on October 14th.
They'll run all the DNA and some more tests that they'll do to help link the bears to one another and also to the site.
That's Phil Mooney, a wildlife biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Sitka. He says the cubs that were taken would not have survived without the two sows.
They were cubs of the year, and what we believe were very young, very small yearlings. They were very much underweight from the norm, and without the sow, they would not have survived in the wild by themselves. And also, we did need samples from those bears too. So, in an effort to get the bear that we thought that it was present at the site early on, we ended up getting another sow that came in, and we had bucket snares there, and they were caught in that and became part of the group that's going to get sampled.
News reports, including from this station, have suggested that Puerta was attacked by the bear, but officials caution against jumping to conclusions. Mooney says the investigation is ongoing and that a lot depends on what's learned from the samples taken at Poison Cove. There is no definite timeline for getting results back from the wildlife vet, who just returned to the office after some field work in the Aleutian Islands.
I know it seems awful slow for a lot of people, but Fish and Game has their part and their interest in the bears, and Sitka Police Department has theirs with the victim. And so there's kind of a different focus, and then we share the information between ourselves to help piece all that together. And some of those pieces that we need to help bring all of those different variables together are not known.
Puerta was a subcontractor running materials to a Forest Service worksite in Sitco Bay. His 13-foot skiff was found abandoned on a beach. A campsite was nearby, and searchers said it was evident something had been dragged into the woods. Poison Cove is on southern Chichagof Island, some 30 miles north of Sitka. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Meanwhile, in Sitka, problems continue with bears running around neighborhoods and getting into trash cans. Last weekend of October, for example, police received 8 calls related to one moving through the Indian River neighborhood. Fish and Game wildlife biologist Phil Mooney says there are 2 bears in town, one working from the end of Halibut Point Road in to about Cascade Creek Road, and the other working in the Indian River neighborhood.
And the reason they're coming is because they're still able to get garbage from some of the residences, and that keeps them coming back to look again. And I know we've had a lot of calls, a lot of frustration expressed that, hey, you know, everybody in our neighborhood's doing a pretty good job of keeping their cans clean and no food in them, but we've got one can or 2 cans where the bears got into it, and even though they've cleaned it up after the fact, the bear keeps coming back.
Mooney says with the end of daylight savings time this weekend, it'll be getting darker earlier in Sitka. He urged residents to continue following bear safety practices, such as traveling in groups, making noise, and keeping dogs on a leash. October has been a busy month, but the summer started out slow for bear activity. Mooney says that might have caused some complacency in Sitka. He says it's important to keep food waste that will attract bears out of garbage cans until trash day. Options include freezing it or taking it to the transfer station. The alternative, he says, is teaching bears some bad habits.
Once the bear gets into something, he's got his reward, and you've already taught him a lesson right there that's really tough to undo, and you need to prevent him from getting to that food in the first place.
Mooney says there's no such thing as a bear-free month in town. While bears move up to higher elevations this time of year, he says every single month in Sitka has at least one reporting of a bear sighting. Sitka isn't the only community struggling with the cost of improving its electrical infrastructure. A long-planned hydroelectric dam project in Ketchikan almost came to an end last week, but the Whitman Lake Dam will live to see another day after members of the city council and the public came to its defense. KRBD's Sarah Chicksaw has more.
City Manager Carl Amlon had sent a memo to the council earlier this week suggesting that the city abandon the project due to high costs and the lack of funding. Impending deadlines also posed a challenge. But at the start of the meeting, multiple community members spoke with urgency of the need to keep the project moving. Executive Director of the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce, Keith Smith, says the project is necessary for economic development and growth.
We see and we are hoping for growth. In order to have growth with mines coming in and more industry, we absolutely need to increase our hydroelectric capacity. Any missed chance to step aside of a project that's been worked on for many years, and this is my opinion, I think that it sends a bad message to Juneau.
Ketchikan Gateway Borough residents and assembly members also spoke fervently in favor of the project. Here's John Harrington of the borough's Economic Development Committee.
If you turn your back on the time, the energy, and the money you have spent to bring Whitman Power online without any immediate replacement, you may be jeopardizing some of Ketchikan's future. So please, don't take this action yet.
Harrington says the borough will do what it can to help make the project work.
Before you take this action, please sit down with your partner municipality, the borough, and see what can be done to bring Whitman online. There may be some solutions to problems you face.
After listening to the various voices from the community urging to maintain project momentum, council members deliberated on the issue with little disagreement. Council member Matt Olson.
It might be expensive now, but 50 years from now, it's going to be incredibly cheap power. I keep hearing that because this is a project for our future. We just have to go on faith and move this project forward.
Design firm Hatch & Associates worked with the city to reduce the $26.4 million construction cost. Even with reductions, though, the project is still $2.5 million over budget, with the likelihood of additional costs. If the project moves forward, a funding package and contracts need to be in place and approved as soon as possible by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, in order to meet the start of construction deadline of March 16, 2013. Jennifer Holstrom of KPU is the lead engineer on the project. When asked whether it was possible to move the project forward on such a short timeline, she said yes, if action begins Friday morning.
I think if we act immediately, project can go forward. If we delay, we're going to kill it by default. We need to have a complete design package ready in about 5 weeks from now. So we're under the gun to get that done. So if you're serious about wanting to continue with the project, we need to keep moving tomorrow morning, and I think we can get it done.
Funding shortfalls and looming deadlines aside, council members also reflected on the political considerations of dropping the project. Here's Councilmember Sam Bergeron.
The one thing that I did consider while I was going over my packet by myself was the political impact of this. A comment was made tonight that if we squash this project going forward after the effort that we put into it and the political, what we've done to it and how we stuck ourselves out there to move this thing forward, I think it's going to be a giant march backwards for other capital projects and other projects, period.
The council voted 5-1 to move forward with the project, with Councilmember K.J. Harris voting in opposition. Mayor Lou Williams III vowed to meet with the borough next week to see how the municipality can assist. In Ketchikan, I'm Sarah Chicksaw.
An Alaska transportation official says design work for a new state ferry is on track and construction of the 350-foot ship could start by next fall. Captain Mike Newsall, Deputy Commissioner of Marine Operations for the State Transportation Department, says the design of the ferry is headed for a July completion. Alaska Ship and Dry Dock, which operates the state-owned Ketchikan Shipyard, is the construction manager general contractor for the design phase of the project. State lawmakers have made $120 million available for construction of the ferry. Transportation Department spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says the legislature's intent has been that the ferry be built in Alaska, but he adds the builder and the construction location won't be determined until the construction contract is awarded. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. And some election news. Under Alaska law, residents who failed to register by the deadline for the state general election may still vote this Tuesday for President and Vice President of the United States. Your question ballot affidavit will serve as your voter registration. And here's a look at Sitka Zone weather. Today, patchy fog in the morning with rain and then showers in the afternoon. Highs around 48 with south wind 10 to 20 miles per hour, increasing to 25 miles per hour with gusts to 35 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tonight, rain showers with lows around 40, southeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tuesday, rain is likely, highs around 43 with north wind 5 miles per hour. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, a slight chance of rain showers, highs around 42, northeast wind 5 miles per hour. And Thursday will be sunny, highs around 38. KCAW, Sitka.